villages which refused to support the Bolshevik regime were ruined. In telegrams to his militants, Lenin ordered that all those who opposed the communist regime should be shot. The Bolsheviks arrested tens of thousands of people for the crime of opposing the regime. Most of these were tortured and executed en masse. The famous Russian writer Maxim Gorky described examples of Bolshevik savagery. In Tambov province, communists were nailed with railway spikes by their left hand and left foot to trees a meter above the soil, and they watched the torments of these deliberately, oddly crucified people. They would open a prisoner's belly, take out the small intestine, and nailing it to a tree or telegraph pole, they drove the man around the tree with blows, watching the intestine unwinding through the wound. Stripping a captured officer naked, they tore strips of skin from his shoulders in the form of shoulder straps. A terrible fear fell over Russia, but the communist savagery had only just begun. When the Bolsheviks came to power, most of the population of Russia lived in the villages, enjoying a pretty miserable standard of living. Most peasants were only just able to feed their families with what they produced. The freezing Russian winters made productive agriculture an impossibility. A decision taken by Lenin in 1918 inflicted an even worse disaster on millions of peasants who were already living in poverty. Private property was forbidden, and the peasants' goods were to be confiscated by the state. Lenin carried out that policy by means of another right-hand man, Felix Dzerzhinsky, the head of the Cheka, well known for his ruthlessness. Cheka officers descended on villages all over Russia and began rounding up peasants' crops and livestock at gunpoint. A quota to be handed over by every peasant and given to the Bolsheviks was drawn up. In order to meet that quota, most of them had to give up all that they possessed. Peasants who protested were silenced by the most savage means. On 14 February 1922, one inspector who visited the Omsk region wrote, "Abuses of position by the requisitioning detachments, frankly speaking, have now reached unbelievable levels. Systematically, the peasants who are arrested are all locked up in big, unheated barns. They are then whipped and threatened with execution. Those who have not filled the whole of their quota are bound and forced to run naked all along the main street of the village and then locked up in another unheated hangar." Lenin was enraged when he realized that the quota set for the villages would not be met. In 1920, he inflicted a fearful punishment on some regions that had resisted the requisitions. Not only would these peasants' crops be seized, but also all the seeds they possessed. Confiscating the seeds meant that the peasants would be unable to produce a new crop. In other words, they would have nothing to eat. Then the famine began. 29 million people within the borders of Russia battled with starvation. In 1921 and 1922, 5 million starved agonizingly to death. Lenin watched what was happening with enormous pleasure. In his view, the famine was most useful. He calculated that it would help to destroy people's belief in God and religion and make them bow their heads to communism. In the Black Book of Communism that sent shockwaves around the world, that devilish idea of Lenin's is discussed thus. As one of his friends later recalled, Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov had the courage to come out and say openly that famine would have numerous positive results. Famine, he explained, would bring about the next stage more rapidly and usher in socialism, the stage that necessarily followed capitalism. Famine would also destroy faith, not only in the Tsar, but in God too. This is what Lenin wrote to the members of the Politburo on March 19, 1922. The present moment favors us. With the help of all those starving people who are starting to eat each other, who are dying by the millions, and whose bodies litter the roadside all over the country, it is now and only now that we can and therefore must confiscate all church property with all the ruthless energy we can muster. Our only hope is the despair engendered in the masses by the famine, which will cause them to look at us in a favorable light, or, at the very least, with indifference. These communications in the Soviet archives have revealed that Lenin deliberately brought about that dreadful famine which cost 5 million lives. That is the same conclusion arrived at by the historian Richard Pipes, who spent years researching the archives in his book, The Unknown Lenin. In his view, for humankind at large, Lenin had nothing but scorn. Individual human beings held for Lenin almost no interest, and he treated the working class much as a metal worker treated iron ore. The reason why Lenin and the other Bolsheviks were so utterly ruthless was the dialectical materialist philosophy they so believed in. This philosophy regarded human beings as a kind of animal and maintained that violence and conflict were necessary for the development of mankind. Not only did Lenin regard human beings as a species of animal, he also employed animal methods to train them. In October 1919, he paid a personal visit to the Russian scientists Ivan Pavlov, famous for his conditioned reflex experiments on animals. Lenin wanted to impose these conditioned reflex methods on the whole of Russian society. Pavlov was astounded. "I want the masses of Russia to follow a communistic pattern of thinking and reacting," Lenin explained. Pavlov was astounded. It seemed that Lenin wanted him to do for humans what he had already done for dogs. "Do you mean that you would like to standardize the population of Russia? Make them all behave in the same way?" he asked. "Exactly," replied Lenin. "Man can be corrected. Man can be made what we want him to be." The so-called scientific basis for that philosophy that regarded human beings as a species of animals. Stalin came to power on the death of Lenin and ruled the Soviet Union by fear and torture for nearly the next 30 years. During that time, He was responsible for some 40 million deaths. Stalin spent his first years in power consolidating his position. He managed to sideline Trotsky, whom he perceived as his major rival, and later had him arrested and exiled. In 1929, Stalin implemented a policy known as collectivization. Lenin's experiment in nationalizing the land had remained half-finished, and Russian peasants were still working their own land and selling their own produce in the market. By means of collectivization, Stalin meant to complete Lenin's initiative and to take away all the peasants' lands and produce in the name of the state. Collectivization began with propaganda films. Posing on tractors, Stalin played the role of a leader who would lead Soviet agriculture towards a new dawn. Russian peasants were shown celebrating communism in front of posters of Karl Marx, and even dancing with happiness. Yet the truth was very different. In 1930, peasants' produce began to be collected up. The Red Army, one by one, seized the produce from every single field. Some peasants managed to hide their goods rather than give them up. But Communist Party officials searched every nook and cranny, eventually discovering the hiding places. The officials also seized the peasants' agricultural equipment. The peasants were left with nothing to eat and nothing to work the soil with. Eventually, that catastrophe that Lenin had described as the most useful for communism raised its head again: famine. In Ukraine alone, 6 million people starved over the next few years. 2 million died in Kazakhstan, and 1 million in northern Caucasus. Children reduced to skin and bone died in agony. There was another ghastly result of the famine inspired by Stalin: cannibalism. Peasants, maddened by hunger, began to eat corpses. Then an even worse horror emerged. Some peasants had kidnapped children and eaten them. In front of these two Russian peasants, caught eating human flesh, lay the remains of the children they had snatched. Stalin's regime had turned human beings into savage animals, just as communism had intended. Everyone who opposed Stalin's collectivization policy paid with his life. The principal target were the landowners known as kulaks. Posters denigrating the kulaks were put up everywhere. Tens of thousands of kulaks were detained and shot. In actual fact, the regime branded everyone it saw as opposed to its ideology as kulaks. Large numbers of priests and even members of their congregations who attended church frequently were arrested as kulaks. Some were executed. Others were sent to the labor camps, where a slow, lingering death awaited them. These camps were set up all over Russia and were simply another of Stalin's killing machines. Millions of people regarded as enemies of the state were worked to death in them, under the most terrible conditions. Some were put to work laboring on canals in the blazing heat. Others were sent off to break rocks in the freezing cold of Siberia. These people, forced to perform hard labor under the worst possible conditions, soon turned into living skeletons. The great majority never left the camps alive. Joseph Stalin was delighted by all this. In a speech to the Communist Party Congress in 1934, he declared collectivization to be a great success and was warmly applauded by the delegates. One by one, Stalin's closest associates took the floor and declared what a genius he was. However, a secret vote at the end of the Congress produced an entirely unexpected result. Out of the 1,900 delegates, 300 voted against Stalin. Stalin was stunned. The ballot forms were immediately collected and burned, and the vote declared invalid. It was then announced that Stalin had been unanimously elected Secretary General of the Communist Party. This was not the end of the matter, however. Stalin decided that that treachery would not go unpunished. About 1,000 of the 1,900 delegates were killed within a few months by Stalin's secret police, the NKVD.